Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. But first, WISEI was there. You had Democrats and advocates of women health, the news conference. The Secretary of Veterans Affairs says he doesn't like, no, he resents being treated like a child by a leggy. And the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance says Highway 29 from Kewaunee to Prescott is a north-south divide for our economy. Well, WISEI was there.
And we certainly can do better than regulating women's reproductive health care decisions more than we regulate guns in this country.
Why is China important to us? Out of every 10 apples in the world, 4.5 come from China.
Aún no lo tratan como criminal por no tener una licencia de vehículo.
We're treated like criminals because we don't have a little piece of paper.
When I ask my children to clean their room and they don't clean their room, and then I realize that I should have provided them with a date by which they cleaned their room, or a timeline with it, which they should have cleaned their room. I feel like I'm having that conversation right now. Do you need us to let you know when it is that we need this so that it can be completed?
When we're having a discussion, one of the best things is not to compare the other individual to a child. So I take a little offense to that.
There's not one Wisconsin. There's, you know, multiple regional economies.
The North doesn't have any even medium-sized cities for the most part. Young people especially are big city people.
The reason that the arts are important is because the arts are important.
Next bill we have is SB 425, which provides local governments, local units of government, additional tools when regulating the siting of macro towers, and also establishes a framework for the expansion of small cell wireless facilities.
This bill is nothing but a bailout for the telecommunications industry.
I did bring a few things, a little kind of show and tell to show some different products that are actually made with hemp that we produced in Kentucky. Some protein powder, some really lovely soap, and of course one of Kentucky's biggest imports besides bourbon, which is moonshine.
JR, did you see this new major announcement by Assistant President Ray Cross coming? And let's just go through it basically. He's proposing that the 13 two-year colleges merge with the regional four-year universities in their areas. The 2010 through 2017 enrollment at the colleges were down by 32%, including a drop of 52% at UW-Manitowoc, a drop of 51% UW-Marathon County. This is the biggest change since the UW and the state college systems were merged in 1971, and the regents, not the legislature and the governor, must approve it by July 1. Did you see it coming? Because I didn't.
No. So far, Ray Cross has been getting kind of decent reviews in the Capitol about having this kind of innovative idea to try and merge the two. What will be interesting to watch, though, is going forward, is does it open the door to talk about closures? Because that's one thing I get the impression that they're trying to avoid, is closing any campuses. But as you look at the tech college system, the two-year campus and the 4 years, there are the questions percolating in the Capitol about, well, do we need all these campuses? Are there ways to find efficiencies? So that's a conversation to watch if it develops in the Capitol. The other thing is implementation. So we have the shared governance model with the UW system where you get everybody involved to kind of talk it out.
Yep.
That what didn't really happen here. So now Cross has to worry about the implementation. If you worked in an academic setting or been a part of any changes in one, when you change things without buy-in from parties, you can have some difficulties. So it'll be very key for this process to get buy-in from the faculty and staff, the students, to make sure their concerns are taken care of and addressed in the final version of what this is going
to
look like.
Yeah, I talked to an aide to one of our four-year chancellors yesterday, and he said that the study group only formed like 3 months ago to come out with this. So there was some element of surprise. I asked him, was this announced after the governor signed the budget for a reason? Answer, no. Do you know of any linkage there?
No.
I don't either.
But it's just a reality of what's going on with the enrollment at these campuses and what's happening. So they've got to figure out a way to create efficiencies and make them relevant in the system.
Well, it's interesting because the 13 colleges, let's talk about it. How much money is it going to save? If you look at the last budget for the 13 colleges, it's $146 million out of a total system budget of $6.25 billion. That's 2.3%. Mm-hmm. So is saving money a driver here?
Good question. I haven't seen the final plan, to know, will there be faculty layoffs? Will there be efficiencies? How will they do things? Will they be structured? Will they not lay anybody off, but move people to open jobs to try and... Those are all the questions that kind of drive whether there'll be any savings or not from this.
Yeah, and let's look at an actual map of the proposed mergers here. Five of the colleges, the 4 years, don't merge with any of the five of the universities. Let me correct that. Don't merge with any of the colleges. Superior, River Falls, La Crosse, Stout, and UW-Parkside. The rest of them pick up some of these. Do you think if this proposal goes through, the current colleges, our two-year colleges, will be like branch banks?
Good question. How that is going to work. And then also look down the road. What about the tech college systems? Is there some interplay with there some down the road?
Yeah, that is. But you went back to, you referred to the number of higher education institutions in Wisconsin. And I checked the number. 13 four-year UW colleges, 13 two-year universities, I have to get that right, 13 two-year colleges, and 24 private colleges and universities, a total of 50. So there are some unresolved questions in terms of synergy with the tech colleges. Mm-hmm. What are you hearing in terms of whether this stands a chance of being approved by the regents?
Good question. Other thing to watch is that legis get very protective of campuses in their districts because they're significant employers that pay good salaries.
Yes.
So there'll be a little bit of a situation to navigate with that as well to make sure that nobody's getting hurt or you keep lawmakers on board, that they don't get their curiosity piqued this process.
And just a PS on that, Democratic Senator Janet Bewley put out a release saying she resents UW-Barron County being assigned to Eau Claire when UW-Stout is much closer. So this is a major news development. And a PS on that, a programming note, I'll be interviewing UW System President Ray Cross, 9:30 on Monday. Okay, JR, now let's talk about the most emotional debate in the Capitol this week over the Sanctuary City bill that's coming back. That bill, SB 275, local governments could not enact any ordinance forbidding police from asking about an immigration status. The penalty, between $500 and $5,000 per day, loss of shared revenue or state aid. Violators would also be liable. Cities who enact a ban would also be liable for any damages caused by a illegal alien, and that's a term that's in the bill summary. That's not mine. Republican sponsor, Senator Steve Nass, Representative John Spiros in the Assembly. Is this a live bill for this fall session?
Governor Walker's office didn't answer questions about whether he's on board with it. Both Republican caucuses met this week. I have not heard out of those caucuses if they took any position pro or con about any bill for the fall, if they made any final decisions about it. But we're looking at a situation now where you have maybe 2 days on the floor this fall to come in and do stuff. January,
31st, and then potentially bleed in the first week of November.
January, maybe February, in both houses, and then they'll be done. So can they get a consensus on a bill like this and get it knocked out? Didn't happen last time, so will it happen this time? We're still in this post-budget kind of hangover period where the two caucuses aren't really enamored with working together right away. They still need a little recovery time, so we'll see what they can figure out amongst themselves next few weeks to take up.
As we said, this was the most emotional testimony in the Capitol this week. Let's listen to a few minutes of it.
Some opponents of this bill may argue that creating sanctuary cities is designed only to help protect crime victims who are in the country illegally. However, their assertion is false. Law enforcement rarely, if ever, inquire about immigration status of crime victims or witnesses and have the discretion to grant immunity to victims and witnesses of crimes. This is common sense legislation that will help protect Wisconsin residents from unnecessarily becoming victims of crime. However, it does not make local law enforcement officers act as immigration enforcement agents, and it does not require local law enforcement to go out looking for people who entered the United States illegally.
And it's just going to be a witch hunt. It's going to happen. Someone's going to be stopped for going to work or taking their child to school, and boom, there goes the whole family structure. There goes generations being messed up down the road.
Yeah, this bill doesn't deal with...
No, it doesn't.
I cannot deal with ICE. What the federal government does, they do. I can't control that.
But you're allowing officers to be ICE agents.
No, this bill does not do that. It does not do that.
This bill is racist, it's unconstitutional, it's irresponsible, and it's immoral. When you characterize an entire group of people as criminal, that's racist. When you don't even acknowledge that within that community, there are people who are also victims of rape, who are also victims of domestic abuse, who need the ability to come forward and ask for protection, that's racism. When you call someone an illegal alien, I don't care what the law says, you strip them of their humanity. That's racism. When you trot forward here, fair, a group that is considered to be a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which studies, their whole mission is to study white nationalists and hate groups, that is racism. Because we contribute to this state, we contribute to this country, and we're not going to stand by and have our families separated, and we're going to fight for each other. There are many people here who are U.S. citizens. I am a U.S. citizen. I'm the daughter of immigrants, German and Mexican, and I'm here to fight for the rights of immigrants who are human beings like you and I.
This bill simply seeks to ensure cooperation between local law enforcement agencies and the federal government, and to ensure that our local governments are complying with federal immigration laws and ICE detainers.
Senate Bill 275 will then place me in a position to violate the Fourth Amendment, the 16th Amendment, as a law enforcement officer. And that's a dilemma that is shared by all 72 sheriffs across the state of Wisconsin and the 300 largest sheriffs of this country and the 3,018 sheriffs across the United States. I would ask that this committee, you, Mr. Chairman, reach out to our sheriffs here in Wisconsin and let's look at how we can be more cooperative with the direction of our country without asking our sheriffs to violate the Constitution of the United States.
JR, now let's talk about the ongoing dialogue. Let's use that term between veterans and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Daniel Zimmerman. Let's provide the context. In the budget, Joint Finance loaded a provision that said we reserve oversight rights and up or down rights over the transfer of money from one home to another. Mm-hmm. And the background of this is the money transferred out of King, the King home for veterans, the other homes are not, that were not doing as well. The governor vetoed that. That was not a popular veto, right?
No, and Secretary Zimmerman said this week essentially, well, you guys approved of it because you signed off on the budget. And John Nygren said that couldn't be further from the truth. Yes. He was not happy about that comment during committee.
Right, and co-chairman Samantha Kirkman said the legislature has accountability oversight over these transfers. But another part of this was, at one point, Secretary Zimmerman was asked, you're drafting a plan, a long-range plan for the agency, let us see it. And as Secretary Zimmerman's response, that would be kind of silly. So how serious is the split between these legislative leaders? Because Kirkman chairs the audit committee, mm-hmm. and Nygren said that couldn't be further from the truth.
I don't think Secretary Zimmerman won a lot of fans this week, from what I can pick up. Now, he may have been walking into a difficult situation just because people are unhappy about the governor's vetoes on the oversight. So he's set up to be like a punching bag a little bit, which often happens in these hearings. But on these responses, or the impression I got from these responses, did not really soothe over the concerns about how things are going with the veterans' homes.
Yes, and the secretary said there has been a transformation at King, which the audit said was plagued by low morale and other problems.
He questioned how you define morale. He said, look, here's this other audit saying that, you know, there's top-notch care going on. This refutes all of those stories about what's happening. So there's still some issues and some questions of trust between the two branches.
Okay, now let's get into pure politics. The race for governor next year, November of 2018. Mm-hmm. Democrat Matt Flynn of Milwaukee, a retired partner of Quarles and Brady, gets into this thing. He's the eighth Democrat, as we'll talk about in a minute. Former state Democratic Party chair. It's interesting. He's kind of 0-for-4. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, his bids for public office haven't worked out so well.
You had two U.S. Senate, two U.S. House.
One last for the House was 0-4, I believe, against Gwen Moore, and that primary opened up when Jerry Klitschko retired. As you look at the field, we talk about lanes. Like, what lane are they going to run in? And the question is, well, what's Matt Flynn's lane? He is from Milwaukee. So, in theory, Matt Flynn could have ties to Milwaukee money. That's one of the bigger donor bases for Democrats and Republicans in Wisconsin. So, could he freeze those donations or make it harder for a Dana Walks or a Tony Evers to raise money either, or any ground committee money out of there? We'll see. He hasn't won anything lately. He was state chair 20-some 30 years ago. That's a while back.
1970s, I believe.
But what's indicative of is the field, as it gets bigger, there's no real strong, like, this is the candidate who is the front runner.
Right.
And as more people get in, it reinforces the notion of all these guys have a shot. But come January, we're going to see their fundraising reports. And if nobody can take control of that race, it will send a message that there's a weak field that can't have anybody emerge or nobody's emerging from. It'll then prompt calls from Democrats of, well, who could come in and really do this for us? Will there be a call for a wealthy somebody, successful in the private sector, to come in and run and put his or her money in? Could they convince somebody who said no to rethink about it, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing is, what's the environment going to be like next year? You know, we still don't know what that's going to look like. So Walker is in a strong position, maybe not as strong as some people like to think, but with President Trump, who knows what 18 is going to look like? So as I look at this Democratic field, like, okay, they're all thinking to themselves, I've got a shot at this nomination because nobody's really pushing me out of the way. So I could find my lane, and with 8-9 people, 25%, 30 could win you the nomination. I win that nomination, and then I go run in a anti-Trump environment, and I'm at least competitive with Walker. There okay. is a path there.
Flynn is 70 years old. He came. He held two press conferences. He did an interview with you guys. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm going to be interviewing him Monday afternoon, so watch for that interview. But he said there, it was interesting in the video, Trump is destroying the nation, and then, quote, Scott Walker is slowly destroying the Wisconsin way. I can't stand by and watch the great forward tradition of our state obliterated. The response of the state Republican Party, Matt Flynn is this is their term, dirty defense attorney who has built a career on defending special interests and those who prey on Wisconsin families. This is a reference to him defending the
Milwaukee Archdiocese
against the priest abuse.
Moving priests around, the lawsuits that filed. Flynn defended his work, so he's not backing away from it at all. That because of his work and the work of bishops, that they ended the practice of moving these priests around without warning to the new parish about, you know, their past behavior. He didn't think it would be an issue, but I can guarantee Republicans will make it an issue. If he somehow won the nomination, it'll be a huge issue, Republicans pounding him on that one. That is a very touchy subject, especially in the Catholic communities and Milwaukee community, about what happened.
I agree. Okay, JR, this is the public service part of the show.
Okay.
We're going to put up a graphic of 8 announced Democrats mm-hmm. and 3 potential Democrats. And as a public service, let's identify them. Okay, starting from top row left.
Tony Evers.
Secretary of the
Department of Public Instruction.
Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Matt Flynn, Milwaukee attorney.
Who we just talked about.
Dana Walks, state lawmaker from Eau Claire. Mike McCabe, who activist, longtime activist in the Capitol. Now Blue Jean Nation is running.
Right. Okay. Now, I'll do the bottom row. We've shaded some of these because I haven't announced yet, so we'll only deal with the announced candidates. Bob Harlow, Dodgeville, right?
Ran for Congress in California last year, now is in Wisconsin.
Stanford graduate.
Yes.
Right. In his 20s, I think.
Yes.
Yes. Michelle Doolin, mm-hmm. Cross Plains. I think she's a hairdresser.
Yes, owns her own salon, I believe.
I haven't interviewed her yet, but I hope to. Have you interviewed her?
No.
Okay. And then Andy Gronick.
A Milwaukee businessman.
Has he got a campaign manager yet?
Yeah. No, not last time I checked. He is kind of in that top tier a little bit right now because he's got, I think, some money, some connections in Milwaukee, but also has some baggage as well.
Okay, and then finally, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma. Now let's talk about the ones that we've shaded, because I'm going to ask you, is Kel DeRoy's going to run? She's far left in our graphic.
She appeared at a forum on Monday. She said she was always past her due date. She has had a child that may be born yet, but said that she joked that the child is pro-labor. That's why she was able to attend. So she is still thinking about getting in. She would be a break from the other candidates because she's much younger, for one thing, than the others. A more progressive woman than the others who are looking at running, or than Kathleen Vinehout, at least. So that would be kind of one of her niches, maybe, in the field.
And we're also listing as shaded Malin Mitchell.
President of Statewide Firefighters Union.
I don't think he runs, but am I wrong?
He has been toying with the idea for a while. At the state convention this past spring, they said, well, there's this whole thing about speaking at convention. They weren't going to have any Democratic candidates for governor speak at convention.
Right.
Well, Malin introduced somebody, so they said, oh, that's a sign he's not going to run. I talked to Malin, he said, well, that's not what I promised. It's still too early to make any decisions. So he's keeping his options open right now.
Okay, and then the final one we had shaded because he's not officially announced, Paul Soglin. Who knows?
Madison mayor. If we talk about those lanes again,
yeah,
Soglin and Flynn would have a similar lane in that older kind of progressive liberal in the party base. They'd go, well, you know, they have history with both of these guys. That would be maybe a competition for the two for their lanes, if you will.
Okay, these are 11 pictures. Anybody's picture that we omitted at PSI?
There are always a few people who register that you don't know who they are or what their motivation is. And it's always a test to turn in your signatures come June 1st. I think it's 2,000
so.
Or something like that, between 2 and 4,000 signatures for statewide race. So we'll see who actually makes the ballot.
And now let's talk about the incumbent. Republican Governor Scott Walker has said what about when he's going to announce?
Early November, which is getting closer all the time. He has a new logo out this week. The Walker with a little bit of an arrow tilting at the bottom of it, so Wisconsin forward.
And it doesn't say Foxconn, right? Say Foxconn Valley or something?
Arrows are very big this year, or last year and a half in logos. Hillary Clinton had the H with the arrow going this way. Walker has his own arrow. So the governor's going to announce it's a matter of time when he actually rolls out and says, I'm actually running this race. But he's been running for a while now.
A while. Okay. It used to be... decades ago when I started in this business, Republican legislators didn't want much to do with the issue of hemp, which is why I'm bringing this up. Now you have Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point and Representative Jesse Kramer of the Fox Valley, am I correct?
Yes.
They are introducing a bill that would allow farmers to grow hemp again, ignoring the potential pejorative label of this is getting close to legalizing marijuana.
Well, they draw a big distinction that, one, Wisconsin was a major producer of hemp, I think, before World War II.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
It can be used in clothes and ropes and, I mean, all down the line. Two, THC is the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, which basically what makes you high. The THC level in hemp is so low that you're not going to get a high off of it. So their argument is just, you know, put a big, wide gap between marijuana and hemp. This is a crop, not a drug. That's what they're pushing, at least. We'll see. You know, it's an interesting idea. It's early. They haven't told us the agenda yet for the fall, but we'll see how this thing goes.
And I was interested. The Wisconsin Farmers Union official said this. Hemp has, quote, been a victim of mistaken identity with its recreational cousin. Mm-hmm. Can you see, if this bill passed, Governor Walker signing it?
It's a good question.
With all the emotional baggage and symbolic baggage that comes with it?
See, I think, I wonder, though, because they're making the point that this is not a drug. And I'm not sure that anybody would ever accuse Scott Walker of being pro-drug. So I don't know that he'd have to worry about that label too much. It'd be interesting to see, though.
Would be. Okay. Stock picks, sir.
So, rising, Tammy Baldwin. Here's the numbers for you. $2.4 million raised the last quarter.
3 months?
3 months. $7.1 million raised in all of 2017 so far, which is more than Ron Johnson raised in all of 2015, and $5.3 million in the bank. So she is in a fundraising league all of her own compared to Kevin Nicholson and Lee Vukum. Now, that's to be expected a little bit, because Nicholson has only been in the race, he only been in for 2.5 months or 2 months and a week before he had announced. He raised $400,000 in that first 2 months plus 1 week. Lee Vukmir was in for 3 weeks, raised $250,000. Now, everybody knows campaigns, knows for both of those guys, it wasn't just raised in that period of time. Before they announced, they spent weeks, if not months, lining up donors and, you know, glad handing and saying, hey, if I get in, will you support me? So they knew there'd be a bump of cash the day they announced. That said, they have a long way to go to catch up with Tammy Baldwin. And I've asked all week, can they catch Baldwin? The answer is probably not. But they have, each have a super PAC, both with well donors who can help level that playing field. The keys to watch are this. One, just looking at a money perspective, whoever wins that nomination, to make sure that he or she is not broke the day after the primary and goes to go dark, because that happened to Tommy Thompson in 2012, and Tammy Baldwin did a great job of defining him as not for you anymore.
Yep.
The super PACs could fill that role. Two, Eric Hovde. He's still the mystery candidate. Will he get in? Will he not? He hasn't really said for sure what he's going to do, but if he got in, the money that Kevin and Leah are raising is not going to scare him away. He has a much bigger checkbook than $400,000 or $250,000, so he can get what he wants to. And then three, we've got this dynamic kind of that's been perpetuating of with Nicholson as the guy who's got the national kind of attention because they like the profile of former Marine, business consultant, great profile take on Tammy Baldwin, versus Leah Vukmir, the person who's been through the fights of Act 10 and the recalls in Wisconsin, right, and has a deep connection to the grassroots. It keeps playing out. This audio that came out this week.
I wanted to go there because there was an audio made of Leah Vukmir saying perhaps Mr. Nicholson should run for the Assembly or the State Senate. And
basically, this guy doesn't have the experience. We don't know him. He hasn't proven his credentials. Now, for Nicholson's camp, it gives the opportunity to say, "What he was in battle. How dare you say this guy who was a veteran and is a business person,
combat tours of Iraq and Afghanistan,
should wait his turn."
Yes.
Part of being the establishment. For Vukmir, it's bolstering the, but he hasn't been here.
Yeah.
What's interesting to watch the establishment argument is, in Wisconsin, the grassroots are the establishment. You know, think about it. They've been through all these fights over Act 10 and the recalls. Governor Walker, even though he's been in public office for most of his life, almost all his adult life, has that anti-insurgent, like that insurgent-type conservative credential, right? Mm-hmm. So they've fought these battles, and so to them, Leah is part of them, right? So I'm not sure how the anti-establishment line is going to work in Wisconsin, because we're not like in Alabama, where a Roy Moore can beat the incumbent senator by 9 points. We're a different dynamic. At the same time, Republicans nationally are having this debate about their soul. Like, where are they as a party? So it's fascinating to watch that establishment, anti-establishment thing play out in the next few months.
And you talk about Republicans mixed.
Glenn Grothman, so there's really not a lot of reason why Glenn Grothman should be any trouble in that district next fall. I mean, he won by big margins in 14 and 16. It's a Republican seat. He won the radio this week and said, hey, fundraising isn't going very well. You almost never hear a lawmaker or a member of Congress do that. So the question is, well, why did he do it? And there are a couple of reasons I got. Well, maybe one, maybe he's truly worried. Maybe he thinks that Dan Cole, a Democrat, could really give him a run for his money and that people don't realize this seat could be in play. I mean, I will not venture a guess at all about the environment 2018. It could be toxic for Republicans. It could be another Trump wave. I don't know what's going to happen. But if Republicans are losing the 6th congressional district, it is a tsunami coming across this country that is putting them, a lot of people, out of office.
And mention the Democrats are running against it.
Dan Cole. He's Cole.
That
name.
Would be a K-O-H-L Cole.
Okay. Nephew of Herb Cole, the family, the Cole stores, everything else.
Yep.
He's got private money that he can tap into. He's going to have some national networking he can tap into. But maybe Glenn was trying to say, hey, don't forget about me. Don't rest on your laurels. Let's just kind of have like a little bit of a wake-up call of the fire burning.
It's so rare for an incumbent, and he's now in his second term saying, fundraising, kind of emptied his pockets a little bit. Okay, falling.
So I could pass you, Wells. We have a Dane County judge this week who said eight of them, said, DNR, you should not have issued these permits. Here's an issue going on. Sent them back. This has been an issue that's been going on now for about 6 years in Wisconsin, where we have first a 2011 law that says agencies, you can't do anything, any rule, unless we tell you explicitly you can do it.
Yes.
AG Brad Schimmel last year says because of that law, DNR, you can't look at the cumulative effect of these wells, these high-capacity wells,
right,
in deciding whether to issue the permits. This is all the way to that stuff, right? Judge said, no, there is a public trust doctrine in the
public
Constitution.
Public trust in the Constitution. And
so
she
you have to protect the public
that.
Waterways.
Right.
And that you guys are not doing it, these valid permits violate that. The next level is there was a bill passed this spring that said, okay, when these wells are transferred or property is sold, DNR, you don't get a chance to look at them, you know. They keep going on. So this is very much a touch issue in the Capitol for environmentalists and for the business community saying, look, we need certainty with these wells. They can keep producing for us to do potato farming, to do agriculture in central Wisconsin. So very big issue.
And DNR said they weren't sure yet. They're still going through the decision. They don't know if they're going to appeal it.
Still reviewing, yes.
Okay. JR, I'd like to take the next couple of weeks off. Can you and your future co-host do hold up the Rewind banner?
We'll do our best.
Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for October the 13th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.